The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Stop now? All right, let's go. Okay, great. Thank you. So, for the third time. So the topic for tonight is getting caught on the way to love. So this is kind of an addendum, in a way, this talk, to a talk I gave Monday night here, which was called The Way to Love. And that talk was inspired and based on this little book, The Way to Love, by Anthony DeMello, the last meditation of Anthony DeMello, who's a Jesuit priest. And really, really lovely set of teachings here on love. And the way he talks about love isn't just interpersonal relationship love, but love as a way of being in the world, as seeing everyone. And really, he equates love to awareness, just clearly seeing things as they are. So on that note, when I also talk about tonight about getting caught or getting triggered, getting caught in the interpersonal relationships, when issues come up, again, it can be about in interpersonal issues. It might be about something that's coming up with groups or an idea, or just where we get caught in general on the way to love, if you think of love as a more general way of being in the world. So that's one way to hold that. Or a more specific way to hold it is interpersonal relationships. When you get caught and emotionally you feel upset and hurt and the mind is going and trying to find a way to resolve it in your own mind before you have a conversation with the person that you're in conflict with. So wouldn't that life be easy if there are no interpersonal relationships and conflicts, right? If there were no people, life would be easy, but also the interpersonal relationships is what makes life worthwhile and precious, and it's also a path to our practice. These conflicts, these times, these ways that we get caught, is what our life gives us to wake up. They're not a problem. The conflicts, the issues that arise in our life are not a hindrance, are not a problem, are not something that are taking our energy and time away from the real work, which is our practice and our self-development. They're actually, that is our work. The work is right there. So our waking up in the world is that the grist for the mill is these conflicts and whatever comes up in the middle of the world that we have to work with in our heart and in our mind. So they're precious, they're valuable. There's not something, there's not like, oh, I wish this wasn't happening, this is terrible. Well, it's actually, in a way, we should be rejoicing. I mean, not rejoicing in having conflict, right? But rejoicing in that, in this human life, these are the gifts we get for waking up. This is the way we wake up. Where there is conflict, where there is a rub, there is a pointer to something about our perception, our reality, as well as others, that there's a rub, so there's a pointer that there's something there to wake up to work through, to expand our hearts, our minds, our understandings. So conflict and getting caught up in and of itself is not a problem. It's actually, it's an opportunity to work through. Otherwise, we would never know the limits of our love, the way that we can be in the world. It's where we hit that limit, is where we hit that edge, is where we need to expand. So, again, getting caught in itself is not the teaching, but how we work through it and how we are with it and we learn from it and grow through it is the path, the path for growth. So the first step, I would say, in disentangling when we're caught, the very first step is realizing that we're caught. I think that's the very first thing. It seems kind of obvious, right? But we sometimes don't even realize that. We might be caught in an emotional upheaval about, I said this, she said that, he said this, when going around the story and there's emotion fueling, and then we're this caught in the story of being hurt or being upset or whatever the story is, and we may not even realize that's what's going on. We just tell, you know, it's, this tape is playing and we might be going about our day and upset and you know, kicking things, not literally, but kind of in our minds, kicking things and not, you know, being upset, but not even realizing that that's what's going on. So becoming aware that, oh, we're caught. There is this reactivity. There is this tightness. There's this being caught here that, okay, there is work to be done here. That is really, really the first step, because until we acknowledge that, we're not even mindful that something is happening. We're just in this quagmire, in this whirlpool, going down and down and down, playing the tape over and over again. Step two is to separate the, if there has been harm, if there is some hurt, if there is some reactivity that's coming up from that energy of feeling hurt or feeling that something was unjust, etc., separating out the effect that it has had on us from the intention that we're attributing the person. And their intention. So there are really three different things. So because when we're hurt, the first place the mind goes, you know, they are unjust, they're unfair, they're this, they're that, you know, there's the blame. Oh, they intended to do this, right? They intended to do this. So the hurt right away in our thinking goes to subscribing difficult, unwholesome intention on their part. They're unthoughtful, they're ungrateful, they are dot, fill in the blank in your own life, whatever that is, right? We're attributing to the other person that unwholesome intention, that it was their intention, right? So the first step is to see the way that we're hurt and that intention we're subscribing is probably separate, it's probably very different from the intention that that person had. So just acknowledging that their intention is likely has been very different from what we're subscribing it to be. We don't know what it is, but just giving them the benefit of the doubt that the intention is probably different. So along those lines, trying to see the other person as clearly as possible. And this is something that Anthony DeMello in his book On the Way to Love really talks about, that clear seeing, love as clear seeing is seeing the other person as clearly as possible. Not through the lens of our assumptions, perceptions, biases, judgments, but really seeing them as clearly as they are, not through our lens, but really seeing them as clearly as they are, which also means trying to see their intentionality as clearly as we can possibly see that. And in order to do that, we may have to take a very, very important step. Put ourselves in their shoes. not see the situation from our perspective, because we're always in our perspective, and our perspective is always right. Have you noticed that our perspective is always the right one, right? But seeing the world from their perspective, what does the world look like from their perspective? What are their motives? What are the constraints that they have? How do they operate in the world? And not so much, again, from a place of not putting ourselves in their, but putting ourselves in their shoes from a place of empathy, really inhabiting their shoes. What does life look like from their perspective? So this, a lot of times, this allows us to get out of our own head, get out of our own story, because we're usually the star of the story and the center of the world. But jiggling that out, giving it some spaciousness, getting out of that and seeing the world from that person's perspective. How do they see this situation? How... what could be their motivation, and giving them the benefit of the doubt as much as possible. Just shifting perspective. This is a step of shifting perspective. And it's best done if we let go of the reactivity and just try to do this thought experiment of getting into the other person's shoes and seeing the situation. Similarly, the same way that we try to see the situation from their perspective and seeing this being, this person, as clearly as we can possibly see them, not with the filters that we usually have. Similarly, we try to do the same thing for ourselves. And what does that mean? And that means trying to shine the light of awareness on our own motives, on our own assumptions, with as much objectivity as we can. Are there places that we're not being fair? Are there motives that we have that are, you know, a little kind of mixed? So it takes a lot of humility and courage, actually, for us to see that, you know, we're not always right, and we don't always have the best, purest intentions, which is fine, but just to see that, just have a lot of humility and see our own self, again, with care and with love, but with clarity, kind of poking a hole in our own story, right, in the me story from my perspective, but very gently, like the same way that a good, kind friend would say, well, come on, really? I mean, seriously, is that really so? Is it really so? So far, I've talked about the first step being just realizing that we're caught, realizing that there is something, some energetic tightness, reactivity that's happening, that the tape is playing over and over again. So that's number one. And then number two was trying to see the person as clearly as possible, their motives, in a way of putting ourselves in their shoes, extending empathy, seeing the situation from their perspective as objectively as we really can without the tentacles of being caught. Step three was shining the light of awareness on ourself, our own motives, our own assumptions, our own background. A lot of times background stuff gets into it. We get triggered not because of what the person really did, but because we have this kind of a hang-up on this thing happening to us all the time. And it has nothing to do with what this person has really done. It's our hang-up and just being honest about it. Yeah, it's that. Yeah, it's that. Yeah. So that's number three. And the fourth one, I like the fourth one the best. And that is inviting in our mind, inviting wise counsel in our mind. So the way this works is conjuring up the image of people in our lives whom we consider to be wise. Could be our spiritual teacher if we are working with one. Could be people we consider who are wise, we listen to their talks or read books by them. Could also be, we could, in this circle of wise people, we can also invite archetypal figures like Buddha or Jesus, as well as people whom we know and respect, such as the Dalai Lama, for example, or the idea of Martin Luther King being in this circle, this wise counsel circle. Okay, so we're imagining this room of wise counsel. In this circle, we also invite our own truest, deepest inner wisdom. That part of us that's really wise and really spacious and can hold a lot. And we know that that part of us is there and available. Right now it's caught, you know, we are caught and triggered in what's happening, but there is that part of us that's wise. We invite that person to also have a seat in the circle, that being to have a seat in the circle. And finally, we invite ourselves in the state of caughtness that we have, because the steps 1, 2, 3, 1 and 2 and 3 might have worked, or we might still be caught a little bit. So we invite ourselves to also sit in that circle in our mind. So this part, actually, this step might be best done if we're doing some meditation, if we're sitting and walking and we're having some really real time to conjure up this image of a wise counsel. So I suggest that you invite yourself not to sit in the middle, because if you're sitting in the middle of the wise counsel, it's like it's a judgment, you know, everybody's looking at you. Not that. You take a seat in the circle also with everybody else in this round circle. So you're all together. Everybody, all your wisdom friends in your mind are supporting you in what's happening. So you imagine sitting in this beautiful circle with all these wise beings that you have conjured up. Okay, and you're asking for their counsel, and you think, what would they do in a situation like this? How would they advise you? You can also go through, bring the image of each person one at a time and see, and imagine you having a dialogue with them. What kind of question would they ask you about this situation? What would you answer them? Maybe they would ask, you know, what is the crux of it? Why? What's going on? Why are you hurt? Can there be more space? Just imagine yourself having a wise conversation, whatever this wise being in their own style, if you know their style. It could be a wise friend you have, a very wise friend. What would they tell you? So this step can actually be really, really helpful to conjure up this wise conversation to bring in more wisdom into the situation, whatever situation might be that you're caught up in. It can help bring not just wisdom, but spaciousness. And can really help you... Basically, all of these steps actually are ways to bring in both stability, clarity, and wisdom, right? The clarity is to have clarity about your perceptions, about the other person, about the situation, your perception about yourself. So it's all being mindful. It's a lot of mindfulness when it's difficult, when one is triggered, right? So bringing mindfulness, clear seeing to every aspect of the situation, bringing spaciousness, bringing wisdom. And you might have to go through these various steps one of these steps might just work, but you might have to go through them. And after you go through them, you might still feel a little more spacious, but you might still feel stuck. So it's work in progress. It's something to work through, depending how much one is caught. And sometimes the wise thing to do might just be to be with it, just to give it space. Might be difficult, might be painful, and just to be with it. Can I be with this? Can I sit with this? Can I be with this? Can I breathe into it and hold? Can there be some space until the mind finds stability and wisdom? And then when the mind finds stability and wisdom, then and only then is the right time to have a conversation with the other person, with the other being. Not before then, but only then, because then you're not talking out of a place of reactivity, but you're talking, you'll be having the conversation from a place of wisdom and spaciousness, and still working towards resolving the situation. Because being a Buddhist or practicing in this tradition doesn't mean you accept everything and you're a wet noodle and people walk all over you. It doesn't mean that at all. The inactivity is inactivity out of hate. You don't act out of hate, but you act out of care. You definitely act. And many times you need to act, you need to do something. If there is a problem, to change, to speak up, to change the dynamics, to draw a boundary, maybe even at some point having a conversation. And if there is a situation where there might be a boundary of not throwing anyone out of your heart, but not having them in your life anymore, out of compassion for yourself and for them. Because it's just too destructive, too painful. So, but again, not out of hate, not throwing anyone out of your heart, wishing them well. May they be well. May they truly, truly be happy in every way. And maybe the wisest thing is to have a boundary. So, again, not out of hate, but out of care, out of wisdom. And when it's all done, after it's all done, you need to let go. You need to let it all go. Not hang on, not carry the hurt, because it's all clear. It's an open hand. You've worked through it. You've come to an understanding about the situation, about your own self, about the biases. You've increased your wisdom and you've grown in that situation. And just let it go. Let it go. There's nothing to hang on to. Let yourself be clear. So there is more I can say, but I think it's a good time for me to stop now. And actually, I like to invite, let's see, we can be roughly what? Trying to invite some conversation and try, and since our group is small enough, maybe we can just have a conversation and some reflections. What's come up for you? What thoughts are coming up for you? Can you think of situations where this makes sense? What is there wisdom that comes up for you that you like to share? Let's start kind of unspecified from there and see where we go. And I think, yeah. You want to pass it on? Well, keep it there. Anyone? Why don't you keep it there? Yeah, thank you. It's closer to you. Oh yeah, great, thank you.
Yeah, I think it's working. So for me, I think just talking about my own practice, I think when I started practicing, I think the biggest impact it had was around sort of relationships that were further out, and they were much easier for me to tackle in this way. And I think over the course of time, I've become reasonably good at, like, I actually don't really have many conflicts anymore, because I think I give myself the space in the moment, and it no longer becomes about self. It's just like you kind of let it go, and nothing is actually kind of almost important enough to have those conflicts with anymore. I think the one for me that definitely I'm still working with, and you guys will laugh, but is with Claire, my wife. Like, mm-hmm. This is the one that, I don't know whether she'll say this, but it's obviously a much closer relationship, and I think it's much more difficult in that moment to step away and not get drawn into it and almost like attracted to not the drama of it, but you know, it really draws you in very quickly. Yeah. And I think I attribute that to just, it's a much closer relationship, and I don't know. So just, that's what came up for me.
Yeah, thanks for sharing that. And I find the same thing.
Think about your pencil.
Was that?
Claire said that she's going to tell me in future to get my counsel ready and just sit down on the mat and, you know, bring in Gandhi and you know.
Great.
And Mary.
Sounds great. I love that. And I completely agree with you, what you said in terms of, I think, in the very, the closest interpersonal relationships with our partners, that's when it's hardest, because with people whom we know and friends and relatives, you're right, as we practice, it gets easier and easier and less sticky, and it's been a long time since I've played electronic games, right? They're levels, level 1, level 10, right? Interpersonal relationships is level 10 of growth, because they are sticky, and we need all of these tools that we have, and because so much matters. It matters so much. And I think there's also probably something about our physiology and something about all the chemicals that get released that make it so much important and so much more sticky in some ways as human beings. What you said, it's so human. I completely agree with you. That's where you need all the steps, and you need your wise counsel, and you need spaciousness and just to be with it and looking at it from a bird's eye view and all this stuff. Yeah.
I have a question as well.
Yeah.
So the one thing that I don't have an answer to is when you talk about being wise and stepping away from relationship, or stepping away from somebody in particular, because part of me wants to be very open-hearted and love everybody, and that sometimes can be a challenge. And I think at what point is it okay, or I suppose it's more a case of, as you said, doing it with without sort of malice. It's doing it with, like how I would describe it is, maybe if I feel that somebody has a bad energy, I would just say, okay, that energy is not good for me. It's not
right.
It's not good here. So it's less about sort of that person's an asshole or that person's whatever. It's
exactly.
Kind of just, you know, this energy is just not good, and I kind of step away. But I still find it very challenging to know what, and I think it there's a lot of, in the meantime, before I come to that decision, there's a lot of tension, there's a lot of conflict involved, more so just internally within myself before I can actually come to that sort of wise decision. So I don't know if it's possible to get to that place without having that internal conflict or less internal conflict, maybe.
Right.
But
it's I think And I would invite other people's thoughts on this, but I think there usually is some conflict, an internal conflict, that at some point in the heart says, you know, as Namaste, I see the light in you, I see that you are trying so hard, whoever you are, I really wish you well, and you say in your heart that this is really not working for me, this is painful, this is not good for me, this is not good for you, it's not good for us. So it's really out of compassion that you separate yourself. Because it's just, you just don't have the resources anymore. It's just not working, right? It's not, if you gave all your resources to this, if you give more resources to this relationship, you wouldn't have enough. You wouldn't have enough to be in other relationships, in other ways of your life, it's dragging you, it's sucking energy out of you, right? So it's not good for you, it's not good for the world. It's really out of compassion all around. It's not out of malice. But it does take some time to get to that place. We never do that lightly and compassionately. Yeah.
I find this sometimes in work relationships, you have to stay in relationship with somebody even if their energy isn't to your liking or whatever.
Right.
And even in close relationships. And sometimes I just come to the conclusion, like, I'm expecting more of this person than they're able to give me in you know, whatever realm, whether it's a personal relationship or a work relationship. And I find that if I kind of let go of a certain expectation, I'm in a much better place.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's sort of in work situations sometimes, you know, you sort of talk to other people and you know, sort of a consensus forms around somebody, whether it's positive or negative. And you sort of have to see that through your own lens also. But, I find I get into trouble when I have greater expectations.
Yeah.
And that's not to sort of hold myself up above. I mean, sometimes I have to look at it through the prism of my own limitations too.
Right, right. And I appreciate you bringing that up, and that also being a way of practicing with attachment to things being a particular way. And when you let go of that attachment, well, this person is just this way, and I'm not attached to my view that they have to be any other way. They just aren't. So, is that letting go of one's attachment to things being a particular way? When you let go of that, yes, you breathe, and then you can be with them, just as you said, exactly. Yeah, I think the case of that boundary, and which we will, a boundary of choosing to not have contact with someone, that decision is not taken lightly, and is where it's just the repetitive hurt or whatever is just continuous, and it becomes a situation that's not sustainable. And what you're talking about at work, it doesn't sound like it's that. So yeah, definitely very, very different situation. Yeah. Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, I'm thinking in terms of work and children, because you have expectations for children, but you have to be able to release that. I mean, I guess I don't fully get that. I mean, you can't, you can, but it doesn't happen very easily to detach from your children entirely. So
yeah,
these relationships kind of have a whole different status.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's, I think it's more, the case where there is compassionate separation, that's kind of like an out there case. So we'll just reserve that. I mean, that's not a very common situation. The reason why I brought that up is, in some cases, in the far out, when there's just so much hurt and it's not working, that's what one does. But what you're saying is more similar to what you brought up in the case of seeing them as, it's like the step two, seeing the person as clearly as they are, not through your projection, seeing your children, well, that's the way that person is, or your coworker, that's just the way that person is, regardless of, no matter how much I want them to be different, they aren't. That's the way they are. So seeing them very clearly, putting yourself in their shoes, seeing the world from their perspective, and then also seeing your own expectations. Again, you're referring to that, seeing your own limitations, expectations, just what you want, you're wanting, you're wanting, me, I want it to be this way, right? So seeing both of those very clearly and seeing if there can be space. Now that you've seen it clearly, can there be space? Can we allow things to be? Can we bring our wisdom counsel and see what they would advise in this situation?
I mean, you gave some examples of a wisdom counsel, but what do people, who would be in your counsel?
Anyone want to volunteer? I have ideas, but anyone want to volunteer?
I've often said, what would Gil do in this situation?
Yeah.
Like, as in, that's just very close to home.
Yeah, exactly.
And anybody in that, what would they do in this situation?
Yeah. And I, since I have the mic, I can. So he said, "What would Gil do in this situation?" Mm-hmm. And I have to say, Gil has been on my council too. I imagine myself having a conversation, a practice discussion with Gil, where I'm telling him the situation, and he asks me a few questions and go back and forth. And he very kindly and gently nods his head, and then he asks me another few questions, and we're just going back and forth. And so he's on my council. I highly recommend him.
I don't know him well
enough. Yeah. Any other reflections and thoughts? So in the few minutes we have left, I'm going to suggest something. I'm going to suggest you close your eyes wherever you're sitting and take a breath in and out. And bring to mind a situation where recently you've been caught, or maybe you're still caught, not the biggest one perhaps, or just maybe the second or third level if you have something like that. Just bring that to mind gently. First acknowledge that, yeah, you're caught. There's some emotion there. Maybe there's some hurt. And separating the hurt out from the attributed intention that you've attributed to the person, but realizing that actually their intention might have been completely different, probably was very different. For a moment, if it's available to you, just take a seat on their cushion of life. Their constraints, their limitations, their hopes, their dreams, their sorrows. Seeing the situation from this person's perspective, as if you were looking out into the world through their eyes. And see if anything looks any different. If something becomes available to you that's different. May not be, which is perfectly fine. They're a human being just like you. And they want to be happy just like you. And they have good intentions just like you. Take an out breath. When you're ready, open your eyes. So I'll send you home with that, if there was anything that came up for you or not. And one last thing I wanted to add was one thing that also really helps is, another step I didn't mention, is trying to see the good in the other person. We're all mixed bags. There are good things about us and things that are difficult about us. But seeing the good thing about the other person. Our mind, when we're in conflict or caught, does not want to go there at all. Does not want to think about them being kind and generous or what, being timely, being punctual, whatever it is. You know, everybody has good qualities. Everybody. Our mind doesn't want to go there, or the time that they've been kind to us, but let your mind go there. Let your mind soften to see this person or this situation in a holistic way, and not just from the perspective of the conflict or the hurt. And wish them well and see how your heart might feel more spacious and hold a lot more than you ever thought possible. So thank you so much for your kind attention and for coming out in the rain.